I will read a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the first canto, chapter 17. The translation and purport is by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. And this is spoken by Maharaj Parikshit to the personified religion, or the personified form of religion, who appeared as a bull. And this is a long story, but we're interested in this philosophical statement, which is about religion in the age of Kali, the present age of hypocrisy. So he is speaking to this bull, who he has met in a very unfortunate condition. The bull has been beaten by a low-class man who is dressed up as if he were a king. And he's beaten this bull so badly that three of his legs are broken. And he addresses him. Tapak shocham daya satyam iti pada krite krita adharmam shais trayo bhagna smaya sangamadaistava. In the age of satya, truthfulness, your four legs were established by the four principles of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. But it appears that three of your legs are broken due to rampant irreligion in the form of pride, lust for women, and intoxication. Reading part of the purport, Prabhupada says, to surrender to the lotus feet of Lord Krishna is not very easy. Such surrender is possible by persons of austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. These four principles of advanced civilization were remarkable features in the age of Satya. But gradually, as the basic principles of Brahminical culture became, which are austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness, became curtailed by proportionate development of pride, attachment for women and intoxication, the path of salvation or the path of transcendental bliss retreated far, far away from human society. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pristaya Bhujale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamani Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pacharani Nirvishesha Sanyavani Pustitari Sitarani. These principles of religion described here are fundamental, and whatever religion appears, whether it's in the name of Hinduism or Christianity or Islam, it should conform to these, it should have these foundations. I get distracted by pictures. In other words, the genuine religions, they may differ in their presentation of the absolute truth, but they all have to have this foundation if they're actually religion. And so that includes Krishna consciousness. The practice of Krishna consciousness is on a foundation of these principles of religion, which are non-sectarian. This discussion is in the context of government, and that government has a responsibility to see that these religious principles are able to flourish. Nowadays, governments are mostly secular. Of course, we have some religious governments, but they're mostly notorious. But the secular government is favored, meaning that the government doesn't impose a state religion. But although the government may not impose a state religion, it should not consider itself having no responsibility for religious principles. So these are the principles of religion. But in this present age, the government is not supporting these. However, it doesn't mean that there's no chance for any individual to develop religious life that can be done in a movement like the Krishna Consciousness Movement, provided we follow it. So let's look at these principles as they're mentioned here. Austerity is the first one. And the Sanskrit word is tapasya. And Srila Prabhupada defines austerity as taking some voluntary trouble or inconvenience for the cause of spiritual life. So, we know what it's like to do things that we may not want to do just in order to maintain ourselves. You have to work, or you have to, a student has to study. These are austerities. But to actually be tapasya or tapo dibyam, and to divine austerity, it should be something that you voluntarily do and it helps you in spiritual life. For example, generally it's advisable to rise early if you want to practice meditation, chanting Hare Krishna in the best time of the day. And there are other restrictions, like on Ekadasi there's some fasting. Anything that now seems inconvenient to us due to our habits that we should give up, the difficulty we undergo is austerity. So this is not supported by general populace, but never mind. We should understand that it's a religious principle, and we should work for it. The quality that is said to work against it is pride. Prabhupada says, in Kali Yuga, even a pauper is proud of his penny. So people are very proud of, even if they don't have much, they're proud of any kind of material asset that they have, without recognizing that all these things are God-given, and that whatever we have, it's really temporary and it's insignificant. A general kind of arrogance or pride about our position also makes us unwilling to undergo the difficulty for or austerity for spiritual life, for purification. This is an emphasis on the work that we have to do to achieve spiritual life. On the other hand, we know that our advancement will come by Krishna's grace, and simply by chanting Hare Krishna we can make advancement. For example, Rupa Goswami says, yena tena prakarena mana Krishna niveshayat. He encourages, and Prabhupada also, when he came to New York, he certainly preached on this principle. First, just engage people in Krishna's chanting of Krishna's holy name. Rules and regulations can come later. Fix the mind on Krishna first. So the rules and regulations we're discussing. When someone is ready for initiation, he agrees no to give up illicit sex, intoxication, meat eating, and gambling. These are the things that erode religious principles. So, although in the beginning, you begin chanting Hare Krishna without any restriction, still these things have to be performed to make advancement. We have to work. And especially in such a bad age as Kali Yuga, when we're surrounded, not supported by government or culture, but surrounded by these counter forces. We're just briefly mentioning them so that we can understand how to improve our own spiritual lives. We should therefore do a little austerity and not be puffed up about our present material position. The next is cleanliness, socham. Now this refers to bodily cleanliness, but more important is internal cleanliness. So the counteraction is illicit sex. It says here, what is it? Attraction to women, but for women, or lust for women, or for women, lust for men. So it's two ways, two-way street. And this illicit sex attraction, without being sanctified in marriage, makes for unclean inner state. Because if you're always thinking about sex desire and capturing a sex partner, then your mind is not concentrated or peaceful or pure to contemplate the all-pure Supreme Personality of Godhead. Krishna is all pure, and you have to become pure to have him manifest in your heart. This is a very clear connection, that inner cleanliness is defeated by too much sexuality. Then, mercy. This is a standard religious quality, regardless of, again, of what denomination or religion it is. A human being is, when he's actually beyond the animal, he's merciful to the suffering conditions of others. In defining the word nonviolence, ahimsa, in the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada, he goes so far to say that people are suffering and they should be helped by being given Krishna consciousness. If you don't help distribute Krishna consciousness, that's a kind of violence. Generally, we think of violence as not hurting another being. But even to not help them is a kind of lack of mercy. But the extreme lack of mercy is to kill innocent animals and to be cruel. So, to be cruel to animals, cruel to humans. So, intoxication is one of the counterforces. Because to be merciful, you have to be gentle, and again, you have to be in a purified, compassionate state. And when the mind is filled with illicit sex, if the mind is intoxicated by drugs of various types, then where is the chance for clear, compassionate thinking? It's an you're in a state of extreme sense gratification and selfishness, trying to get your intoxication, and not considering the sufferings of others. Srila Prabhupada used to say that just to be in this material world instead of in our spiritual body and spiritual consciousness is itself a kind of demented, distorted, or intoxicated state. When you get very intoxicated, you may call it high or something else, but it's actually you're distorted, and you can't think clearly. You don't have a refined spiritual outlook. You may be hallucinated, but it's not actually spiritual consciousness. So we already have that, never mind taking any drugs. We have that by getting a material body which covers up our spiritual sensibilities, which are so subtle and so pure. The spirit soul, the spirit soul is full of bliss and full of knowledge and is in touch with eternity, is eternal, and is in touch with the supreme eternal. So we don't perceive any of these things. We're covered over in a similar way, like a drunken man is stumbling down the street. So we're already intoxicated. You get more intoxicated by taking drugs. How can you have a quality like mercifulness? And then, that's three. Austerity, cleanliness, and mercifulness. So these are the three legs that were broken on the bull of religion, indicating that in this age, at least in terms of the general population, they're finished. They don't exist anymore. They're not being encouraged. Rather, government is encouraging the opposite. But the one leg is remaining, truthfulness. So it's important to understand what we mean by truthfulness. And this is described by Prabhupada in a purport also in this chapter. And the main thing is recognition of the truth of the existence of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the first truth, or the absolute truth, without which any attempt for honesty, morality, really doesn't have any ultimate meaning. So to sincerely acknowledge the supreme truth is truthfulness. As Prabhupada says, the atheists do not believe in the existence of God, and they do not perform any sacrifice for the satisfaction of the Lord. Any place or country where the supremacy of the Lord is accepted, and thus sacrifice is performed, is called Brahmavarta. There are different countries in different parts of the world, and each and every country may have different types of sacrifice to please the Supreme Lord. But the central point in pleasing Him is ascertained in the Bhagavatam, and it is truthfulness. The basic principle of religion is truthfulness, and the ultimate goal of all religions is to satisfy the Lord. So, an honest person recognizes that there is God, and he performs some kind of sacrifice. Now, as Prabhupada states, in this age of Kali, the greatest formula of sacrifice is Sankirtan Yajna. So Sankirtan means to chant the holy names of God, as we were doing in the Kirtan. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Sankirtan can also be taken to mean any glorification of God or praising of God, not only the singing, any kind of sacrifice where you render service to God, like if you give the result of your work, just like Ladini Shakti was saying, any artists, please come, you can paint pictures of Krishna. So you use your talent to serve Krishna. Or he was saying, can you help us get a computer? Spend some money for Krishna. Can you make a sacrifice and go and take part in the Washington, D.C. program? Or in your home, in your life, any work that you do by your labor to please Krishna directly, that's called sacrifice. So this is the expression of truthfulness. Any culture, anywhere in the world, where sacrifice is rendered to the Supreme Lord. But this particular form of the holy name is recommended in the Vedic literature as the most appropriate and possible in this age. It's so easy, and it's so much recommended to produce love of God. That's the idea. Krishna doesn't want us to do sacrifice because he's in need of any goods. But he wants us to revive our happy, loving relationship with him, which we can do by this sacrifice, because then he'll reciprocate with us, and our original loving relationship with Krishna will develop. That's bhakti yoga. So this is the fourth of the principles of religion, as we mentioned. Austerity, cleanliness, mercy, so truthfulness. And truthfulness, there's a big move against truthfulness by all kinds of lying propaganda, which we see in our society, mass advertising, political doublespeak. And on an individual level, we're always tending to cheat. We have a cheating tendency. Prabhupada once said that even in the home, between husband and wife, the husband will say something and then he'll think, I've just bluffed my wife. And she'll say something back and think to herself, I've just bluffed my husband. And in Kali Yuga, this is expanded, the tendency to cheat. And so we have to be very rigorous, as we were saying about the other things. You have to work at spiritual life. So you have to work to try to stop being a cheater in so many ways. The main point is to render service to Krishna, but it's not just that by saying, yes, I accept Krishna, that automatically we become free of hypocrisy and cheating. Rather, when untruthfulness is present in a so-called religious person, then it's the greatest anomaly or cheating act against society, that those who are supposed to be emblems of truthfulness, who recognize God, that they themselves are cheating. But the tendency is there, so we have to be very careful. And Prabhupada gives us advice how you can work honestly within Krishna consciousness. So actually then truthfulness has two definitions. One is to recognize God. If you don't do that, then you can't be an honest person. Even if you say, oh, I never tell a lie. But you don't even recognize the main truth of existence, that you're the servant of God. So that's the first truth, the great truth. This is the truth that Prabhupada has brought to our lives, which we didn't have. Intimate, direct knowledge of Krishna and our constitutional position as a servant of Krishna. But then also we have a process so that we don't cheat Krishna or cheat in the name of Krishna. And he writes about this in another purport. And the point is that everyone has a certain position in society, which is called varnashram. Even if the varnashram society isn't strictly enforced in society, we fall into some kind of ashram. Ashram means you're married or you're not married, which in Krishna consciousness should mean that you're celibate. Or you're retired from your marriage. Or you're a sannyasi. Then you have some occupation. So within those very real, down-to-earth duties lies your field to be honest or to cheat. The progressive religionists and those who are responsible human beings or those who do not want to spoil their valuable human lives should refrain from all principles of irreligiosity, especially illicit sex. If a Brahmin is not truthful, all his claims as a Brahmin at once become null and void. So a Brahmin, that's a spiritual, a social order, the priestly class. So the priestly class, there, especially the Brahmin in Vedic terminology, what's the main thing that he's supposed to be? Is he supposed to be a very good businessman? Is he supposed to be a very good leader, an administrator? No. The main thing is, his qualification is truthfulness. So if he's a good businessman and a good manager, etc., but he's a liar, then he's finished. He's not a Brahmin. Then the next thing is a sannyasi. If he has illicitly connected with women, all his claims as a sannyasi become false. So he may have a lot of Vedic knowledge, no philosophy, and have so many charismatic abilities. But if he has an illicit connection with women, then he's finished. Then what else? Similarly, the king and the public leader, if they're unnecessarily proud or habituated to drinking and smoking, certainly they become disqualified to discharge public welfare activities. These are high standards. It's not that in Kali Yuga a leader has to be free of such bad habits, but he should be, to actually be a leader of people. In other words, there are specific responsibilities for everybody's position in life. The married man's responsibilities are not the same as the priestly class. The businessman, he has different duties. He's not expected to do everything that a priestly class is expected to do, and so on. So within that, within your life, you have to see whether you're cheating. And we say, well, what does this have to do with chanting of Hare Krishna and worshipping Radha Govinda? But how can we come before them with different kinds of basic cheating? You worship the deity, then you go out and you're cruel to somebody, or you go out and you cheat somebody, or your basic life is based on some kind of fraud. So these are the principles of religion. And that's the last remaining one, the truthfulness. What exactly that means, that the others are gone and that's remaining, at least means that it's our last hope. It's our hope in preaching also to people in general, that they'll be a little honest, that they'll still be willing to admit, yeah, I admit that I'm not happy. Yes, when they're pressed and when they're educated, I admit that there is God. Yes, I would like to do some chanting, do some sankirtan, and I would like to become free of all the cheating that's going on in the material world. That's why people come to Krishna consciousness, one reason. They want to be with some people, they want to be involved in something, but they're not getting cheated. Prabhupada's spiritual master, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, said the whole world is a society of cheaters and cheated. You're either a victim or you're very clever and you're cheating other people. You're cheaters and cheated. So we are trying to form a society that is not cheaters and cheated. But therefore, we have to be free of these things. And the Bhagavatam life, or the life of Bhakti Yoga, it will automatically purify us and clean us of these bad habits. Especially if one prepares oneself for initiation, then you agree, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meeting. That automatically frees you of all those things that counteract mercy, cleanliness, truthfulness, and austerity. It's all included right there. And that's the way to become free in Kali Yuga of irreligion, which is, it's the predominant way. Irreligion is the way today. Irreligion is strong. And in the world, religion is weak. Religious men are few. Irreligious people are many. It's a very bad age. But the nice example is given that when the rain comes, in the monsoon season comes, you can't stop it. If you ask a question, how can we stop Kali Yuga in the world? Can we make it not come? Well, in one sense, the answer is no. It's the time of Kali has come. You can't make it not come. But you can protect yourself. Just as in a rainy season, a man can board up his own shop, or you can walk with an umbrella. So this is the way to protect ourselves in this age of Kali, chanting Hare Krishna and following these regulative principles. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any comments or questions? Yes?
Is the tendency to cheat, is that related with imperfect senses, or is it with the several elements?
Is the tendency to cheat related to imperfect senses? Well, there are four imperfections of every human being, and you've just mentioned two of them. This is in the Vedic knowledge, that why we can't be God, or why we can't be perfect, because there are four imperfections, and you mentioned two of them. One is a tendency to cheat, the other is imperfect senses. The senses, you know, you can only see so far. You thought you heard something, but it was the wrong, you didn't really hear the right thing. Your senses are imperfect, so you can't always know what's what. There's also a tendency to make mistakes, honest mistakes, and it to be an illusion. So those are, is it related? Yes, it's related because it's one of the four defects. That shows us that it's such an ingrained habit to cheat. It's like second nature. But Krishna consciousness is training us to not do that. Starting by not cheating Krishna, then not cheating the spiritual master, basically not cheating yourself, not cheating your family, by giving them instead the opportunity for overcoming birth, death, disease, and old age. Yeah. Yes?
Would you please give an additional commentary regarding the trip to Washington Wednesday and the focus of the government's attack on Krishna consciousness?
Yeah. I think the main thing would be for an elaboration on that to go to Lalita Sakhi and the table there and get the... there's like three different pamphlets available. And otherwise, it would take a long time to explain. But it's very important, and that's why we've set up a table. And or you can see Purnachandra Prabhu, the acting temple president. And and read it for yourself. It's a legal suit against ISKCON. Anyone else? All right, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.